Wednesday, November 20th, 2019. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City right here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope that your week is off to a great start, and we can help you get through your Wednesday just a little bit easier. We are happy to have you here with us today. You know, we have a day this week that actually might be at least a little bit under your radar. But today, November 20th, is National Absurdity Day. That's at least what they say. Oddness and weirdness take over. Now, we're not sure why, but it does. Throughout history, bizarre occurrences do take place. They are saying that Absurdity Day is a day to have, I don't know, fun, to do like crazy, weird, absurd, nonsensical things. Use the day as an excuse to do all the stupid things that you have thought about doing, but you never, I don't know, maybe had the guts to actually follow through on. So today, do things that you wanted to do that make no sense whatsoever. And it's going to be okay, because you will be celebrating the national day of National Absurdity Day. You know, I have heard a rumor. I don't know if this is true. I can't really verify it. But I have heard that there are certain, let's say, sports podcasts out there available, maybe on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Spotify, that have been around for a few years now, and they have built their entire show around the premise of absurdity. Of course, we don't know anything about that here at the Daily Dose. We are way too highbrow and way too sophisticated for that kind of foolishness, but I have heard there are those podcasts out there like that. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us how you plan to spend National Absurdity Day. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. Doesn't have to be about National Absurdity Day. Maybe you've got a question. Maybe you've got a comment. Maybe you have a suggestion for us here at The Dose. Feel free to contact us. We would love to hear from you. Also, you probably had better stop by tpublic.com and pick up some Daily Dose gear. I'm telling you right now, the holidays are coming quickly. But if you go over to tpublic.com, they've got sales running 30, 35% off. You can go over to tpublic.com, search Daily Dose, scroll down until you see our logo, and you're going to find sweatshirts, hoodies, t-shirts, coffee mugs, a number of Daily Dose items over there. You're going to get a discount, and they will get them to you in plenty of time for the holidays. So make sure you stop by tpublic.com. Hey, today on the show, we're actually going to do something a little bit different today. We are going to be joined by a close friend of mine today. We are going to be talking all things sports, because Russ McKinstry is going to be stopping by today on The Dose. And you know, when Coach Mac stops by, I just do my best to kind of get out of the way, because he has been coaching sports and he has been involved in athletic administration for decades. He just understands sports better than most people. So when he comes in, we try to cover as much ground as we possibly can, because I really like to get his thoughts on like all the hot stories that are coming out in the world of sports right now. So we will be talking to Coach Mac here momentarily, but we do have one brief news story before we get over to Coach Mac that I want to touch on. You know, last week on The Dose, maybe you listened. If you didn't, well, why not? But maybe you listened to The Dose. And last week we did a Daily Dose top five, where we listed the top five real reasons that troubled NFL wide receiver Antonio Brown is not returning to the NFL this year. And before you get any ideas, no, this is not an apology. One of the reasons, though, that we stated on our top five list was that Antonio Brown was sitting outside of Tom Brady's house playing In Your Eyes on a boombox to Tom Brady, In Your Eyes, hoping maybe he could get Tom to bring him back to the Patriots. Well, we actually may have some evidence that once again, the Daily Dose I-Team nailed that top five selection, because yesterday, Antonio Brown actually posted an apology to New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft on Instagram. Here's what AB said. Mr. Kraft, I apologize sincerely to you and your organization. All I wanted was to be an asset to the organization. Sorry for the bad media and the drama. Thank you sincerely, AB. Now, the Patriots, we know, released Brown back on September 20th, just 11 days after they had signed him, but they were worried maybe there are going to be some legal ramifications. There's going to be some discipline issues. So they didn't want to take any chances with him. 2 days later, Antonio Brown called out Kraft, and he called out Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger, comparing their legal issues with his own. Now, just looking at this post yesterday, I think we can all see, like we said on the Daily Dose Top 5 last week, Antonio Brown clearly does love the New England Patriots. He liked it there. He wanted to stay there. Now, maybe he's playing In Your Eyes on his boombox outside of Robert Kraft's house instead of Tom Brady's. But hey, make no mistake, the jilted lover role does still play here. So best of luck to Antonio Brown. Hopefully you get your wishes or whatever it is you're trying to accomplish. And here's a little free advice to AB. Try standing outside of, I don't know, say a Florida spa with your boombox. You'll have way, way better luck catching Mr. Kraft.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Hey, coming back, we need to get over to a conversation that we have today with Russ McKinstry. Coach Mack has been working in sports for years, and he understands sports better than anyone. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some of the biggest stories from this past week in college football and in the NFL. Joining us right now, a great friend of the Daily Dose, a guy that we have been fortunate enough to have on the dose whenever we get the chance, because Russ McKinstry has coached high school basketball in Colorado, Kansas, and Arizona. He has been involved in athletic administration for years. He won 2 state titles. He's gone to a million Final Fours. He has sent a number of players off to the collegiate and professional levels. Coach Russ McKinstry, thank you so much for joining us today on the dose. We always enjoy your visits.
It's my pleasure, Coach Daly, and it's great to hear from you. And hard to believe we're approaching the holiday season, but it's also a great time of year because we have hockey and football and basketball and baseball just finished. So it's a great time of year to be talking sports.
Well, it is. And we have so many things going right now. I mean, college football winding down a little bit. We're kind of heading toward that bowl season. NFL, we're kind of starting to figure out who is who. College basketball, the NBA. I have heard, I haven't witnessed it, but I've heard the NHL is going. I have no idea. I heard we have a baseball cheating scandal going, but no one cares because, you know, it's baseball. But it is. It's a really, really fun time of year. Coach, I was hoping we could talk maybe some college football, some NFL, maybe even get over to some hoops here in a few minutes. But I wanted to jump in and I wanted to get started in college football. Coach, we only have like 3 weeks left in the regular season, which is totally depressing to me. But I have a few stories I want to get your input on. And the one story I want to talk about first, Alabama Crimson Tide quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, he has that really scary hip injury. They're comparing it to Bo Jackson's. It doesn't sound like it's quite that bad, but the injury changes Alabama's outlook drastically. But I'm already hearing, we're hearing like a ton of people come out saying, well, he shouldn't have even been in the game. I mean, it was the second quarter. It wasn't like he was in the fourth quarter. Nick Saban is a jerk, so everyone loves to bash him, but it's hard to coach injuries, isn't it? I mean, you can't coach with that in mind, can you?
You know, I never, ever gave injuries really a second thought unless a kid, you know, was in a position where, you know, he was injured and shouldn't even be playing. You know, then you take that into consideration. But, you know, most kids, especially at that level that play for a top-notch program, you know, they're gonna play with pain. You can't, there's no way you can keep them out of the game if they're, you know, willing, able, and want to keep competing. So I did not look at that injury as Saban's fault. I thought, you know, he was doing what I would have been doing as a coach, and I think what 99% of other coaches would have been doing. So I don't give much validity to that whole, he shouldn't have been in the game. It was only the second quarter, and you're deep into your season. And, you know, yeah, I know he's a little banged up, but I would have been playing the kid too. I am concerned for the kid, though. I really am. The hip injury, surgery on hips, I've always really worried about those. I've had some players go through hip injuries and surgeries, and they very rarely come out on the other side as strong or as athletic as they were before the hip injury. So I'm sure medical techniques have advanced quite a bit, but I'm still really concerned about the kid's health. More so than Alabama's chances of winning a national championship, I'm worried about the kid coming out and being able to have a productive and healthy, you know, NFL career.
Well, I am too. And not just what he does on the field. He just seems like a great kid. Like, he's a kid you cheer for. Yeah, I'm really, really hoping that maybe this is, we're kind of being led to believe it's worse than maybe it is. And he comes out of this. We end up seeing him at the NFL. I would think his collegiate career is done, but what a career that was. I'm just rooting for him to get better. Coach, another big story in college football was, of course, the huge comeback in Waco this last week, where the number 13 Baylor Bears led the number 10 Oklahoma Sooners 28-3. Of course, Oklahoma comes back, wins the game 34-31. Coach, I know that you and I personally have been on the good side of some really wild comebacks back when we were coaching together. But being on the other side has got to be really, really tough to swallow as a coach. When everything is going wrong, like it was for Baylor in that second half, what in the world do you do?
That's hopefully something that is just a daily cultural thing that you address every day, that your mentality is that, you know, you don't look at the scoreboard and you're going to keep your foot on the gas pedal and, you know, you keep attacking. You're either being attacked or you're attacking somebody else. And as soon as you become someone that is being attacked, and you're just playing, you know, not to lose, and you're wanting the clock to run out, all of a sudden, momentum, karma, everything, you know, changes against you, and it just kind of spirals out of control. And I think you saw that yesterday with the Broncos and the Vikings. You saw that with Baylor and Oklahoma. And it's just very common human nature to hope that the clock runs out and you'll figure out a way to just barely hang on and you win and you move on. But we know that a lot of times it doesn't work out that way. And those are the worst losses you experience as a player and a coach. We've all been there, all been through it. But what I learned later on in my coaching career is, you know, just completely ignore the scoreboard and always keep attacking, and don't be satisfied with being conservative and playing the clock game. Just, you know, keep doing what you're doing and see what happens.
Coach, that was one of the things that I remember learning specifically from you going into a game, whether we were ahead, whether we were behind, and you saying, hey, do not be a scoreboard watcher. Play the right way and things will take care of themselves. You can tell Baylor was watching that scoreboard, weren't they?
Yeah, you could see it in their eyes and in their actions. And you could see that with the Denver Broncos and Vikings yesterday too, that, you know, the play calling, everything becomes, you know, based on running clock, and you have guys trying to stay in bounds and it's still only the end of the third quarter, you know, and you can just see in their whole mentality that they're just hoping that the clock's going to run out and they can escape with a win. You know, it doesn't work that way. And games, even though they only seem like they're minutes long, they drag out for an eternity when you're up big and the other team's making a comeback and you can't figure out how to make that clock run faster. It's just one of the really unique things about sports is you figure out a lot about who you are and what your philosophy is and what your character level is all about. And when you start playing that I'm afraid to lose game and we're just going to try and hang in there, boy, it sure can backfire on you.
Coach, we're looking at college football right now and the top four seem kind of set. We've got LSU at one, we've got Ohio State, we've got Clemson, we've got Georgia. Of course, we've got a couple teams just behind them. You have the Alabamas, you have Oregon, you have Oklahoma, a few of those teams just behind them. Looking at the situation right now, who would you be looking at as your top four teams?
You know, I think right now it would be the top four that are there. I think Alabama, Oregon are knocking on the door, but I definitely think that, especially the top two, I really firmly believe that LSU and Ohio State are your two best teams.
It
might not play out that way, but right now, just watching them both play, I think both teams are really impressive and loaded both offensively and defensively. So I would like to see them be in the national championship game. But those other teams, you know, Oklahoma, Georgia, are very scary, very capable, very, you know, explosive teams that can put up points quickly. So I think it, you know, there's a lot of parity in football, both at the NFL level and the collegiate level. So, boy, it, whoever the four are that get in there, I think it should be. I just wish it was eight teams, like we've always talked about when we talked. I wish it was an eight team tournament. I think that would be a lot funner.
It would. It would be so much fun just to get those next, you know, rung teams in there. And, you know, a team that's starting to scare me, because I look at it the same way you do. LSU and Ohio State all season have looked like the two most dominant teams in the country. The one team that is starting to stand out to me a little bit is Clemson. And I know they're playing dog meat teams because the ACC is so bad. But Clemson is kind of figuring things out. I didn't think they had a good start. They're kind of getting rolling. They might be a team to watch. And we know they're not going to have to play anyone until they get to that playoff. We'll see how they respond when they do get there. Coach, let's move over to the NFL. And we had a really, really interesting week in the NFL this last week. And I don't know if it was a good thing. A lot of it took place off of the field. Of course, the big news over the weekend was that the NFL gave former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick a private tryout on Saturday. Coach, everything about this situation reeked of being insincere on both sides, from both Kaepernick and from the NFL. It seemed like neither one of them really wanted this thing. The NFL doesn't want Colin Kaepernick. I know everyone's saying he's being blackballed or whatever, but it's really, really simple. Your talent has to outweigh your baggage. And to be fair, Kaepernick, I don't think he has, you know, like a Michael Vick talent. If he had Michael Vick's talent, he would be on a team. On that, you know, along that same line, I don't think Kaepernick wants the NFL either. If he takes the NFL job as, say, a backup or whatever, he loses his platform. I don't think either side wants the other, but they both have to kind of pretend that they do.
Yeah, it's just, it's a bizarre fiasco is what it is. And from the very beginning, and you know this as well, I think anytime you start mixing sports with politics or religion or how much money you're making as a player or as a person or as an owner, those three things just don't mix with athletics or sports. And you have all three of those that really are playing a little bit of a part in Colin Kaepernick and obviously with the NFL too. So I think it's a no-win situation for both sides. I definitely think Kaepernick should be playing for somebody. I'm not a huge fan of his, but you can't tell me that he isn't skilled enough to be a backup somewhere for somebody. And then, you know, the whole NFL, you know, thing and whether he's being blackballed or not, you know, all the evidence, all the signs point to him being blackballed. So it's just, to me, it's just one of those really unhealthy situations that, to me, I even hate to think about it too much because I think there's just so much wrong going on from both sides.
Well, I do too. And I totally realize, even as we're talking about this, that no one cares about two old white guys and what we think about this situation in general. Right. But, you know, the one thing that does kind of stand out to me, and like you said, I do think Kaepernick is capable of being a backup in this league. I think we saw this with Tim Tebow up close. When you have that much baggage, your baggage had better not outweigh your talent. Your talent has to be heavier than your baggage. If not, you're going to be gone. And like you talked about, the one thing that kind of stands out that kind of doesn't sit well with us, sports is the ultimate meritocracy, right? If you can play, then you play. If you can't play, then you don't play. And this has gotten so mixed up and so intermingled with politics and all the stuff that it doesn't feel like that. It feels dirty and it doesn't have anything to do with what you can do on the field and what you can do off the field. It has to do with, well, I have this agenda and I have this agenda. The one thing that does stand out to me, and maybe it strikes me because we coached and we did these things on both sides. This is coming from both sides. I don't hear the NFL saying, well, we feel like Kaepernick can come in and help this team win. I don't hear from Kaepernick saying, I feel like I want to come in and be a part of a team and help a team win. Coach, you and I for years have believed in the sports gods. The sports gods help those that do things right and curse those that don't do the right things. When you're talking about just an individual talking about himself and you're talking about these teams with their own agendas, that doesn't have anything to do with team, and the sports gods are gonna you know, smite this whole situation. There's no way this ends well.
Yeah, that's all that was really insightful, and I think so truthful for what's happening here. And you're right. You know, everybody kind of ends up where they should end up. You know, that's just the way karma and life kind of works. Typically, is you typically end up where you deserve to be. And Kaepernick's not helped himself with the way he approaches it and the agenda that he promotes, that's really self-advocating for himself as a political figure. Well, if you're going to take that approach, then, you know, you're going to get what you deserve. And that's probably being isolated and trying to figure out why nobody wants me. Well, nobody, you know, wants the agenda. And I think, you know, and I'm a huge Tim Tebow fan. And I know you were too, but you know, you have to carry all your baggage with you, like you said, and some people just don't feel like the baggage is worth the talent at the other end. So I think that's happening to Kaepernick, and it's really sad that he'll probably never ever really get a chance to play football again. And I think 10, 15, 20 years from now, he's going to look back and think, what the heck did I do to myself?
Sure. And I mean, the NFL, they have their own agenda, and we know that, and they're dirty too. But Yes. We also know that they run a business, and if you're not going to help their business and you might cause, you know, problems with their business, then they're not going to be all on board It's an ugly, ugly look for both sides, though. I will say that. Coach, the yes. NFL was in the headlines last week for another wrong reason. On Thursday night last week, we saw a player lose his mind on national TV when Cleveland Browns defensive end Myles Garrett went completely crazy. He rips off Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Mason Rudolph's helmet, smashes him over the head with it. Coach, what causes a player to do something, forget dangerous, not just so completely selfish?
Yeah, it's just, you know, unfortunately run across people that just really lack some, I guess I'd call it emotional intelligence, you know, and under certain situations, I'm sure Myles Garrett's probably a pretty good human being, and he's a heck of a football player, obviously, but there's just an element to his personality where he lacks, you know, emotional control, emotional intelligence, and because that was just a real egregious act that he, I mean, I can't believe he did that. I can see, you know, someone really is in the position he was in, being irritated, emotional, and so forth, taking a helmet and tossing it down the field or sure. up into the stands. But to use it as a weapon where, you know, he actually really legitimately could have killed kid, you know, that's where you just, you know, blind rage, whatever you want to call it. I just call it a lack of emotional intelligence. You're an idiot when you let yourself cross that line. And, you know, I would hope for me, I don't want to see him banned from the NFL. I think there's some justification for that, but I would like to see him take an entire year, you know, not just the rest of this year, but maybe four or five more games starting next year, just to make it clear to everybody in the NFL that, you know, and what I worry about, and it's probably the same thing you thought about, Dale's, was, you know, how's this going to impact college kids or high school kids who saw this and now will have that same temptation to pull the exact same kind of stunt. But when they do it, unfortunately, they might actually, you know, kill a kid or permanently maim, you know, another person on the field. So I really hope they take a hardline approach with it.
Coach, I know we've been on the other side of a situation like that, or a couple, not as bad as that, but we've been involved in some heated situations like that. Have you ever had a player just go crazy, either coach, and you don't have to name names, obviously, but coaching for, coaching against, did you ever have a player lose his mind like that?
You know, I have very rarely. I've had a couple of players that I guess you'd call it a meltdown, just totally yeah. melted down under certain situations. And, you know, it was basically you had to call in security guards and additional assistance to help, you know, neutralize the situation so he wouldn't hurt himself or somebody else. But that kid would never had something that he used as a weapon in his right. hand. And I think that's kind of what changed my outlook and how I perceived this situation was the fact that he had a 6-pound helmet, you know, that sure. he could use to, you know, really do some damage if he wanted to, whatever he decided to do in his moment of rage. So, yeah, I've seen it kind of come to that level, but I've never actually seen it where, you know, in the athletic realm anyway, where a kid lost his mind and had something, you know, dangerous in his hand. You could hurt somebody else with it.
Coach, the reason I ask you that, and I've got to throw this out there, is I really wonder about Cleveland Browns head coach Freddie Kitchens, because you haven't had a player do that. I haven't had a player do that to a degree. And I'm not going to, you know, pat ourselves on the back or any of that. There is a lack of respect for that head coach and for that team and for that franchise that has to be running through Myles Garrett to be able to go do something like that with no thought whatsoever for his teammates, for his coaches, for his fans. Freddie Kitchens is in over his head.
I think you're exactly right, and I agree. I think anything of that serious of a nature, when it occurs, it is definitely a byproduct of daily messages or lack of daily messages that are sent throughout that organization. And clearly, just by the actions of all the players that have transpired during the course of this year in Cleveland, it's very evident that it's each man on his own agenda, and they're not getting a clear picture of the mission or vision, you know, that includes ethics, integrity, you know, sportsmanship. And I know at the professional level, that's a little bit different message that you hear at the high school police level, but still that's a message that, you know, has to resonate at some level, even when you're playing professional sports, that they're not hearing on a daily basis. And it's really, you know, you can really see it in how they've underachieved as a team this year. It's just, it's a total mess.
Well, and speaking of that kind of stuff, so let's get out of the nonsense going on off the field and all the craziness. Let's get to the stuff that is actually happening on the field, the stuff that is actually meaningful. Coach, the NFL seems wide open this year, and I know we kind of say that every year, but no one is unbeatable. I guess the Patriots are the favorites again, but that team has a ton of flaws themselves. If you were looking just kind of across the board, what are the teams that kind of come to your mind as the top contenders this year in the NFL?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I agree. I think it's exactly what the NFL wants, and they get closer to it every year, is where they want everybody to be 8-8. And
yep.
It's a wide open race to the end, and it's who gets hot and who can stay healthy. But right now, I think, you know, I definitely would say I still would not count out the Patriots. I still like the Saints. I like the 49ers, and then my dark horse, and probably the team that I think if they really got going, is the Ravens. I just really like the Ravens and what they're doing and what they've got going there in Baltimore. And, you know, that's going to be fascinating to see what they do in the playoffs if they can stay healthy and Lamar Jackson can stay healthy, because that's a very, very tough team to beat offensively, defensively, for what they do.
Well, and Coach, I'll be the first to admit, when I saw Lamar Jackson at Louisville, I liked him. I love the way he looked as a player. I love the way he threw the ball. He is such a slight guy. I worried that he would take too many hits. He would be broken by the first week. He seems to understand how to avoid taking those big shots. He seems to have the sense that someone like a Robert Griffin III couldn't ever avoid those hits. He avoids those. I'm glad you brought up Baltimore, because the Ravens look really, really good on both sides of the ball. And that kid is absolutely electric. He can throw it. I don't know that he's, you know, a polished, you know, pocket passer or anything, but he can throw it, and he is so, so blinding fast.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think you never really know how durable a kid's going to be, but I think Lamar Jackson seems to be a lot like Christian McCaffrey, where they just know how to protect themselves, how to use their body. It's just a natural, God-given sixth sense of how to avoid taking, you know, the big hit, you know, in areas where it's going to cause a significant injury. So yeah, he is a very special athlete, very special leader, very charismatic. And, you know, I would give a lot of credit to the coaching staff who was smart enough to see that vision and his capabilities and tailor make a system to fit his natural abilities. Because as you know, you hardly ever see that in the NFL with these, you know, very stubborn coaches who are just stuck in keeping to their system and not adjusting their system to fit the talent of the players. So I'm that's kind of my favorite, just because I'm just so refreshed to see coaches that actually take on the attitude of, hey, we'll do whatever we have to do to make our players successful. And it's not about my ego and my system. I'll change what I have to change to make my players successful.
Well, and you bring up a really good point, because I think John Harbaugh has absolutely done that. There's for years, we saw so many talented kids come out of college, and then we'd see them get to the NFL, especially quarterbacks, especially athletic quarterbacks. And you could see the coach goes, well, I don't know, he doesn't know how to run my system. Well, why wouldn't you adjust your system to him and help him be successful? It's just going to help your team. But coaches aren't always willing to do that. I don't know why that is, though.
No, it's my pet peeve. And it's hit close to home when they took Peyton Manning at the end of his career and tried to make him a drop back passer to fit into a certain system. And
sure,
that I think is just one of the most outrageous acts of disrespect I've ever seen someone show to one of the, you know, top three or four quarterbacks of all time. And that's just the nature of football coaches, though. I hate to rag on them, but they are very stubborn. They're very ego driven. And a lot of them just don't see the value in changing a system to fit one person's skill level. They would rather make it about their system. And, you know, football coaches have a tendency not wanting to learn both sides of the ball and just, you know, keeping what they know at a certain level year after year after year, and not being creative and, you know, thirsting knowledge to improve and better themselves. They just learn one thing and they stick with it for 40 or 50 years. And that's always really, you know, drove me crazy about football coaches and their mentality. Where us basketball coaches, we know, you know, if we're going to be successful, we have to definitely change everything in our system to fit the players' talents, or we're going nowhere. Sometimes football coaches don't think that way.
Well, and that is a good point with basketball, because in basketball, you don't know what you have. I might have, you know, four or five bigs. Well, then I can't be running a guard-oriented offense.
Exactly.
And vice versa. That can all change around. Football, they kind of just go, well, here's the system we run, and we just run it every year, and that's just what we do. And you're going, yeah, well, that's great. But what if you have, you know, a special type of talent like Lamar Jackson? You might be able to tweak some things and get some more, you know, some more wins out of that. Coach, I'm looking at the New England Patriots, and, you know, of course, you can see they've got some struggles on the offensive line. They're really struggling to run the ball, but I'm starting to see Tom Brady, and I don't want to say show his age that much, but he's starting to remind me a tiny bit of Peyton Manning as he was, you know, getting older. If that first look isn't there, he is getting rid of that ball because he is not getting hit. He is over getting hit. He has had enough of those hits.
Yeah, I see that too. And if one thing I always kind of do with Brady is I always kind of read his pregame, postgame comments and, you know, kind of where his mindset is and where he's thinking. And I'm starting to see some chinks in the armor and that he seems to be complaining about things that he never used to complain about.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of starting to point some fingers about this and that, or commenting about officials or coaches or, you know, things that typically Tom Brady was above, you know, ever pointing a finger or making excuses about. But now you start to see those every once in a while. So I think you're right. I think there's just, you know, like we all know, Father Time never loses. There's just some things that maybe are making him frustrated or you know, lose a little bit of that, you know, self-assurance that he had all the answers, which for 17, 18 years, obviously he did, but as we know, at some point that comes to an end. And I think we're starting to see that first hint that, you know, Father Time's going to get you too, buddy, just like you got everybody else.
Coach, I'll tell you this. I do not think the Patriots want to go to Baltimore in the playoffs. They had better find a way to finish ahead of the Ravens, because that is one place I don't think they want to go. And I know Belichick will cook up something for Lamar, and I think that would be a very, very interesting game, but I don't think they want to go to Baltimore. You know, the Kansas City Chiefs are really starting to not impress me lately. And I know, you know, they're winning games, or they're, you know, Patrick Mahomes is special, but that defense, it is so bad. I don't know how you hide that defense, especially, you know, further into the season and you get into the playoffs. I don't know how you hide that.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, there's just, there's some things that they can do offensively that, you know, just really can torment opposing teams. But, you know, when you get into January, early February, whatever it is, and you're playing playoff football, they definitely have some weaknesses or some warts that stand out that might make it difficult for them to make a legitimate run. I love the team, love Mahomes, love Tyreek Hill, very fun to watch, but they kind of remind me of the Broncos teams in the 80s where you might have kind of like what we talked about. You had a really special quarterback and a couple solid weapons, but you didn't have the whole package. And I don't think Kansas City has a whole package like the Broncos didn't have the whole package in the 1980s.
No, I think it's very, very similar. And I think they're going to probably end up going against a team that can. I'm starting to wonder, and I can't believe I'm saying, I'm starting to wonder if like the Raiders are a little bit more of a balanced team than the Chiefs, because they can do it on both sides of the ball a little bit better. They can run the ball sometimes a little more effectively. Can't even believe that's coming out of my mouth, but the Raiders are starting to look, you know, halfway competitive over in the NFC. The Saints look like they should be the class of that conference, shouldn't they? I think.
Yeah, and it's, and I'm like you. I mean, last year when people said, "Oh my gosh, what a disaster Gruden's going to be," and so forth, but in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, you know what? That guy's kind of crazy like a fox sometimes.
Yeah.
Let's really see how that plays out, and I think you're right. I think he might be building something pretty special for the Raiders as they move to Las Vegas. They kind of scare me a little bit. But yeah, obviously, John Lynch and Shanahan, young Shanahan, have really done a unbelievable job in San Francisco.
Yes, they have.
And they have a lot of Bronco ties. So I really like what they're doing and the way they play defense and just their mentality and the joy and passion and energy they bring to the football field, I think is something you don't really see that often in the NFL. You know, those, you can really tell those guys enjoy playing the game of football. It's not their job. It's just something they love to do, you know. So, but, you know, Drew Brees, if, you know, boy, if they can get rolling in New Orleans, I still think that they might be the team to beat. I might be wrong, but I kind of like what they've got going there in New Orleans too.
Yeah, I do too. They should be, I think, the class of the NFC. If they can get going, they can maybe find a couple more people for Breeze to throw to, and if that defense holds together up, they'll be right there. Packers, I guess, are there. Philly, I don't know about.
Yeah.
You know, the team that kind of intrigues me, and I don't think they're good enough to really do anything, but up at Seattle, Russell Wilson is so, so good. And I don't think he even has much help, but he finds a way to get wins. And I will take that kind of kid every time.
Yeah, I love Russell Wilson. He is like the ultimate winner, you know, just finds a way. He's like that really great point guard that basketball teams have that,
yep.
You know, you very rarely find someone who has all those intangibles and leadership skills and natural athleticism. And he's just got the whole package that he just really elevates everybody's game around him. So yeah, you know, Seattle, and Pete Carroll's kind of that underappreciated coach too, that, you know, he lets his players play free and easy. And, you know, he's just goofy enough that they play really hard for him. That, yeah, Seattle's kind of like Baltimore. I would not want to play Seattle in the playoffs either.
No, they're just a pain, and they're going to be physical, and they're going to be tough. And if the game is coming down to the last few seconds and it's crazy, that's where Russell Wilson just seems to thrive. He's just that kind of kid that finds a way to make those plays that win you the game. It's going to be a fun season as we come down the stretch. Okay, I hate to even bring this up, but I guess we have to talk about our hometown team, no matter how painful it is. Coach, we've mentioned them a few times already today. But the Denver Broncos are now 3-7. They are coming off of that tough road loss to the Minnesota Vikings. They were up 20-0 at one point in that. Coach, are you seeing any, I guess, spots for optimism whatsoever on that team?
You know, actually, I really have. And yeah, they're, you know, it's been a really heartbreak type of season with the close losses and you know, just the death by inches as Fangio came in and said that they'd have to correct that in order to be good. Well, it seems like every game they're losing because they can't do the little things, the little details correctly. So that's just been hard to watch. But I see a young core that is improving. I see a coaching staff that really has made all the players, in my estimation, really improve during the course of the season. They just don't have enough horses right now to go out and win games in the NFL. But you know, if you can add, you know, four or five more pieces through the draft and free agency going into next season, and if you could settle in on a quarterback that you like, that you want to commit to for the long run and not panic and try and sign a old veteran like Flacco or use Flacco again or Cam Newton or, you know, a retread Andy Dalton type of quarterback, I could get kind of excited going into next year if they decide to take that course. But if they want to try and do the win now with an older quarterback, then I think we're hopelessly stuck in a spin cycle of, you know, very mediocre to below mediocre football.
Well, Coach, and I look at that coaching staff, and I haven't had much positive to say about this team all year. I predicted they would win three games all year. Right now they're on track, but, you know, Detroit's worrying me, Buffalo's worrying me, we might slip up and win a couple more games. But Vic Fangio, And I heard the report that maybe he's not getting along that well with his players, and some of the players aren't, you know, connecting with him. I don't care. I don't give a crap about any of that stuff. That guy gets this team to play hard every single week. They are getting better every single week. They just don't have any talent. There's no talent on that roster. There's like five or six players that you can really look at and say, no, that's a legitimate bona fide NFL starter. And the rest of them, I'm sorry, they're not. What he's getting out of that group, I'm actually really impressed with.
Yeah, I really am too. And really, you know, the people that you thought you could count on to really make the plays are probably the ones that are most disappointing to me. I don't think Chris Harris or Von Miller or, you know, maybe Derek Wolf maybe is having a solid to above average year. But Von is not the same Von that he was, you know, during the glory years, Super Bowl year. And Chris Harris is solid, but he's not nearly as good as what he talks himself up to be, you know. So it really is a bunch of young guys that are just, you know, playing really hard for their head coach and maybe overachieving a little bit for their head coach. And that's why I don't totally dismiss this as a wasted year. I think a lot of young players are getting a lot of valuable experience, and I actually kind of hope we play really hard like we have been and actually maybe lose. And I hate to be that guy, but the higher draft choices we get, maybe that's really what needs to happen and should happen. And so we're getting the best of both. We're getting young guys experience playing, and we're going to end up with maybe the opportunity to bring in some really good talent based on the draft choices and the amount of cap space we have, which is going to be around $70 million. You know, we really could make a big, big change. But my worry is that do we have the right guy in Elway and his right-hand crony, Matt Russell? Are they the right people to make the choices about the players? That's my only concern.
Well, it is mine too. And Coach, we've talked about this before. When you're looking at football, you build your team from the football and then you work your way outward. The Broncos right now are built from the outside in. So I look at Von Miller, who is a stud. I look at Bradley Chubb on the other side, another stud. I know he's out for the year. These are both edge guys. You have no one near the football that's that, you know, quality of a player, but you're wondering why you don't have success from the guys outside. You have Chris Harris out near the sideline. You've got Courtney Sutton out near the sideline. Mm-hmm. The guys up the middle, that's where you're getting beat every single week, and that is where they are the softest. Like you talked about, John Elway hasn't done a very good job of building from the inside out. Coach, every single day, I wake up and I hope that I'm going to have like a notice on my phone that says the Denver Broncos announced they're bringing in Peyton Manning to be, I don't care, some advisor to personnel or something, and make my life just a little bit better. And I'm wishing on nothing, aren't I?
I think you and I share the same dreams, and I think we know that it's never going to happen, but hey, you got to give us some kind of hope. If there's even a remote chance that that might happen someday, I think the Broncos would be so much better off. And we've talked before too. It's so frustrating to me that the guy lives basically 10 minutes from Dove Valley and has chosen Denver to be, you know, his city where he wants to raise his family. And we are not smart enough to utilize him in some capacity. To me, that's just the ultimate sign of how dysfunctional and how much of an ego we have when it comes to that organization, where we refuse to do what's best for the entire organization based on some people's insecurities based around power and making decisions. So yeah, that's a rough one for me to swallow, because I think he would probably do whatever we needed him to do if we would just approach it the right way.
Coach, I keep seeing him on the sideline at home games. Peyton Manning is on the sideline at home games. I don't see, you know, other former players down there. I keep hoping. I know it's stupid, but I just keep hoping. Okay, I'm going to switch. I'm not going to talk anymore NFL, because the Broncos are going to get me all fired up and my blood pressure is going to just get higher and higher. Hey, coming back, we still need to get over to college basketball and the NBA. What does Russ think of the scandals taking place in college basketball right now? Going to talk about that a little bit. And what young players does he enjoy watching in the NBA? We still have a number of things to cover today on The Dose. So let's jump back into our conversation with Coach Russ McKenzie right now, and we're going to be talking a little bit of college basketball. Coach, let's move over to college basketball. The season is just now underway, only a couple of weeks in. But once again, it seems like we're just talking about all these scandals. We're still waiting for something to happen to like half a dozen programs. They tell us that your buddy, Bill Self, out at Kansas, could be in some hot water here soon. Memphis stud freshman James Wiseman, he has now been declared ineligible. He's sitting out for now. They're saying they're going to get him hopefully reinstated, but it just feels like we have so many of these scandalous things kind of going on. But I want to kind of get your thought on one thing, and maybe I'm crazy, I don't know. We hear all the time how dirty college basketball is. All these coaches are paying players. It's all filthy. We know, you know, some of the things being said about Arizona and Auburn and Kansas and all these different things. And don't get me wrong, you and I know firsthand that stuff does exist. We know that. But doesn't the fact that it doesn't seem like anything is coming from any of this mean that a lot of these programs are doing things the right way? Because we're not getting nearly as much as they acted like we were going to get. I think there's a lot of good coaches out there that are doing things the right way.
Yeah, I think that's really the case. Coach, I think 90, maybe even over 90% of the programs are clean and doing everything the right way and you know, abide by the 4-inch, you know, volumes of chapters of NCAA regulations and policies and compliance factors that they have to abide by. I mean, it's unbelievable what they have to abide by. But sure. I would say that, yeah, 9 out of 10 programs are doing that. And there are maybe, you know, a dozen or less programs out there that really fall into the category of where, you know, it's just a matter of time before they get caught based on, you know, what they're doing in order to get players to come to their colleges. And it's really sick. It's out there. But I also know the NCAA and the actions of the NCAA, they're not following through. They're hypocrites as well, because I think some of the dirty programs should be dealt with immediately. But for whatever reason, you hear about it one day and then it just disappears. It's gone. And it's hard for me to figure out why and how that's happening.
Well, yeah, because we've heard for years, there's been all kinds of accusations against North Carolina. It's literally been like 10 years. Nothing has ever happened. Either they didn't have the juice that they said they did, or they didn't do anything. I don't know what's really going on, but I don't know. I do think it seems like the NCAA likes to kind of blow their own horn and say, hey, we found all this stuff. Okay, well, where's the evidence? Well, we didn't really have any evidence. Coach, where do you come in on this whole players, and I know it's not just college basketball, but you know, players getting paid for their own likeness thing? It seems like the NCAA has basically said, well, we can't really fight it. There's nothing really we can really fight when these states are going to approve these things. It feels to me like maybe they haven't thought this all the way through. I feel like we're going to open a can of worms that maybe we didn't expect, but maybe I'm just worried because we've seen that in the past. Where do you come in on that whole players getting paid for their likeness thing?
You know, I think it's kind of Pandora's box. I mean, I understand it. I get it. I hate the way players are manipulated while the institution is making millions upon millions of dollars off of their talents. I get it. But yet, you know, when you start taking into account every athlete at college, soccer, tennis, volleyball, water polo, they won't get any money for their likeness or their image, most likely. But yet you'll have maybe a handful of football players and a handful of basketball players that will capitalize on the ability to make money. What are the dynamics of that? What are the Title IX implications when, you know, your male athletes are making a lot more money than your female athletes? And what's going to stop a lawsuit from occurring if your male basketball player is getting endorsed, but no female basketball player can get any endorsements? So I'm like you. I think it is something that wasn't well thought out. I think it's going to lead to a lot of very unusual dynamics within programs and jealousies and finger pointing and who's making money, who's not making money. And, you know, you're making money as a running back, but I'm the lineman that's blocking for you, but I'm not making money because nobody wants to hire me for my likeness. And how do I feel about that? I just think there's just so many things there that really are going to really challenge the leadership of each college, including the coaching staffs, to deal with some really heavy duty human interactions that I don't know if those kids are ready to deal with at that age.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to be ready for that either. And Coach, just as a rule, just in life in general, anytime politicians start telling us these things are what is going to be best for this is when I usually say no, especially when those politicians are from California, just across the board. I just go, nope, that's not going to work. I don't know how it's going to work, but I know that's not going to work. So
I agree.
It's just a pretty easy.
Yes.
Yeah. Just a pretty easy rule. They don't live in the real world. What in the world are they even talking about? They have no idea. The one thing I do want to kind of throw out there, Coach, my son is getting ready for college. And, it seems to me, just based on some of the numbers I'm seeing, they're going to make a lot of money off of him too. And he doesn't even play sports. That's what they're in the business to do. Everybody's like, well, they're making a lot of money off these kids. Yeah, I got news for you. They make money off of every single kid that walks through their hallowed doors. That's what colleges do. They make a lot of money off of the kids that come there. I think it's way too much and all that, but that is what colleges do. Take it up with the university presidents or whatever. Coach, again, let's get to the good stuff. I know you are already watching college hoops because I know how you are. You're turning on those games that no one else is watching. You're turning on those Big West games. You're turning on some of those small conference games. Throw out a few teams that you really like already in college basketball. I've seen a few games. I've probably watched more than I should even admit, but I know you've watched more than even I have. Who are the top teams, do you think, going into this year?
Well, I think this year there's more parity and potential tournament winners at this point that I've seen in a long, long time. I don't think there's any team that's dominant. But I think there are a lot of really solid teams that are capable of winning it. You know, I think obviously Michigan State, Kentucky, Kansas, the typical thoroughbreds are there. Duke, I think Duke's going to be a lot better than people thought. They're a young bunch. That's a pretty special bunch. And it's filled with, you know, really no names compared to what they've had in the past. But that's a really good group of freshmen. And they got some upperclassmen that are filling in. So watch out for Duke. They're going to be better than people expected. You know, what's really hard and what I've noticed as I watch the games early in the season is you just forget how many impact graduate transfers there are, where, you know, a kid's been with the program for 3 or 4 years, graduates, and still has that 1 year of eligibility left to transfer and play for another team. That's probably the biggest thing that's been kind of surprising to me, is the number of good players that were with one program but have now left that program to play with another program for the opportunity to play for 1 year. And that's really going to have a huge impact, I think, on who's going to make a big run down the stretch. For example, Arizona got some of those graduate transfers in their program. And for a team that I thought was going to be okay, they are a lot better than I expected just because of the graduate transfers they got on that team. So I think that's something that I'm still trying to figure out, because those are things that you really don't hear much about. But when you start to pick the games up and you really start to delve into the season, you just notice all these familiar names that were at one institution but are now playing for another institution, and the impact they have is going to be pretty significant.
Well, and not only are they transfers that are extremely talented, they're transfers and kids that are experienced. Exactly. That bring in that kind of veteran, you know, knowledge that a lot of these kids don't have. We saw last year in the tournament, you see a team like Virginia, you see a team like Texas Tech. We know there are going to be those similar teams this year that have some savvy to them. They have some understanding. They're a little bit more experienced. You know, I look at a team like Ohio State or even like Oregon. Oregon is so big. That is a huge team. And still, I wouldn't count out even a Texas Tech because of their coach, or Virginia because of their coach. They just know how to win games. Coach, I watch Virginia, and I don't care who he has playing for him. Every single year, he just goes out there and says, well, here's the deal. If you can score 50, then maybe you can beat us, because you're not scoring, you know, 51. That just doesn't happen under Tony Bennett. What a job he has done back at Virginia.
Yeah, he's an amazing young coach. Not young so much now. He's pretty experienced, but I still consider him to be a young coach. He relates really well with those players. They play really hard for him. And obviously, you're not going to get a minute of playing time unless you are a top-notch, you know, defender. So, which gives you a chance to win every night because their defense is so solid and their schemes are so well coached. So, yeah, and there's just, and the other dynamic is a lot of these teams that get the transfers, it actually disrupts their chemistry and they end up not competing or achieving at the level you thought they might achieve. And I know one of your favorite teams is the Florida Gators, and, you know, they have a lot of pressure on them to be, someone that could possibly win a national championship. But, you know, I've watched them play twice now, and they just really are out of sync with the talent that they have that has come over, you know, and joined the program. So that's what kind of is so fascinating, as they get through December, is who kind of gels and who kind of falls apart based on just team chemistry. So I guess there's a lot to be determined, and we'll know a lot more by mid-January.
Well, and it's going to be a fun season. It always is, but it's going to be fun just to watch these teams develop. Some of them will step forward. Some of them will step back. Coach, I know, you know, we're going to have to get going and everything, but before we let you go, we've got to talk a little bit of NBA. Hopefully China won't shut us down for talking some NBA, but we're going to talk a little bit of NBA. Coach, we've seen this huge, significant shift in power. The Golden State Warriors are now, I think, effectively dead. It looks like all the power is in Los Angeles, but we've got a few teams in the NBA this year. They can contend, can't they?
Yeah, I'm usually typically not that big of an NBA guy. I like a lot more now that the Nuggets are really competitive, but yeah, there's just, you know, with Kawhi going to the Clippers and LeBron and Anthony Davis now with the Lakers, obviously there's been a shift from San Francisco down south to LA, and the NBA, I'm sure, just loves that because they love, you know, when the two coast teams are really powerful. And, you know, I think Boston's got a nice bunch of players. So they've got the East Coast mentality there. And, you know, we'll see. You know, Houston looks really strong. you know, with Russell coming over and joining Harden. I didn't know if that'd be a good combination or not, but so far that seems to be working out really well. And, you know, you have the Nuggets who, you know, if they ever figure some things out, are going to be, you know, in the hunt. And, you know, Trailblazers are really struggling, and they were supposed to be really good again with some of the people they brought in, but they're struggling. And you got Milwaukee, and Philadelphia looks like the real deal. I really like their team. So, yeah, I think this is going to be a really interesting NBA season. I'm just really, really hoping that that doesn't turn out to be the Lakers at the top. That would kill me to see them win it.
Right. You know, Coach, we have that kind of, like you talked about, that veteran, you know, kind of guard of older players, the LeBron, Kawhi, James Harden. But you know, one of the things that is really intriguing to me this year, we've got some really interesting young players coming in. The Luka Doncic, the Trae Young, the Pascal Siakam out in Toronto, Devin Booker in Phoenix. When in the world did Phoenix suddenly get halfway watchable? There are some teams that I haven't been used to even watching. I'll turn them on. I'm not watching that. Atlanta, I'll watch them. Dallas, I'll watch them. There's some interesting young players this year in the NBA.
Yeah, I like the young group of players that have come in. And you're right. I really like the Doncic kid at Dallas. I really like him.
He's good. He's a lot. Strong.
I think, man, he's special. But you're right. There's a lot of special young players. And the talent in the NBA is just keeps getting better and better. And you just think that, you know, there's just no way we can get better players and more talented athletes and more athletic players. It just seems like there should be a ceiling or a point where they can't get any better. But, man, they just keep coming, and it seems like there's more of them. And it just makes watching basketball a lot of fun.
You know, I look at a kid like Luka, and I hate to, you know, make that comparison, but there are aspects of his game you do kind of think of a Larry Bird. Things that he can do and the way he sees the floor, he goes and rebounds. I don't even know that he's not overly athletic or anything. He just makes the smart little putback that you're like, oh, they really needed that bucket and he found a way to get it. There is something to be said for those kind of players though. And he seems to have that kind of it factor.
Yeah, I agree. And he does remind me of Larry Bird and you know, maybe even a little bit better athlete than Larry, and
yeah,
a little bit bigger, stronger, but he's special. I mean, his natural instincts and his savvy and his ability to come up with plays at the right time and make the right decisions for a kid as young as he is playing against the best players in the world. Man, if they get some pieces put around him, watch out. Dallas could be really, really special.
Coach, I'm glad you brought up the Portland Trailblazers, because last week the Trailblazers went out and they signed Carmelo Anthony. I just wonder how that interview went when they went and sat down with Melo. Hey, Melo, we need some scoring. Well, I'm not much of a shooter anymore. Also, I'm not going to pass. I don't play defense and I don't rebound. And they're like, done. Sign that contract. What in the world? Does Melo have anything left? I can't imagine that he does.
The only thing I can think of is, and I've never considered him to be in this type of frame of mind, is as a mentor.
See?
You know, someone that could come in and help some younger players, you know, basically be a workout guy that helps guys in their personal workouts. I don't see him ever really contributing in a game situation. I don't think he's ever worked hard enough in his life to be in, you know, good enough shape to be just a defender or rebounder or someone that plays a role. You know, I've never seen him as that type of guy. So, you know, unless he convinced me, he could come in and just kind of help with their mentality and mindset. But I've never seen him in that frame of mind either. So, yeah, that's perplexing. I didn't get that at all. I was surprised. I thought he was done for sure.
Coach, he has not been the same since he left Denver. And I know here in Denver, you know, the table was kind of set for him to be the man, but he looked like a different player. There was way more effort then. It still drove me crazy to watch him attempt to play defense, but it was at least better effort. He doesn't even try anymore the last few years that we saw him. And I know there's kind of this sentiment that, hey, Melo's getting another chance. Yay for him. And I'm sitting there going, why yay for him? What in the world has he ever done that I should be impressed by? I didn't understand that at all. Once again, Coach, we need some therapy for our pain. How much faith do you have in our hometown Denver Nuggets this year?
Well, I was a little bit concerned the first probably 5 or 6 games. I'm starting to feel a little bit better about it.
Yeah.
I still think, unfortunately, I think our best players still lack some maturity in the Joker, Jokic. You know, there's just so many cases of either not being focused or not being prepared or not understanding what the situation dictates at a certain moment. I know he's made some really big time plays to win games.
Yeah, some game winners.
So you know it's there. But I think a lot of it depends on really, unfortunately, and maybe fortunately, I'm not sure even how to evaluate it yet, is how Malone decides to, you know, utilize his players with substitutions and, people that he brings in off the bench. I think if he is able to handle all the egos and people that feel like they deserve playing time and feel like they deserve a prominent role, if he can figure that piece out, then they could be, you know, really, really dangerous. And I think they'll be right there. But that is such a big question mark and if to me, because I just see them. I wish they would have made a couple of trades to get rid of some of the log jams they had. I'm just, as a head coach, and you were in the same position as a head coach, when you just have so many people, like, you feel obligated to get playing time. And if you don't find a way to get them playing time, they're going to be a disruption to your team, or, you know, whether they even really want to be or not, they end up being a disruption or a cancer. And I think he's got about 12 players that obviously could play and provide some, quality minutes. But as you know, there's just not enough minutes to go around for everybody. So they've got a very tough dynamic that they're going to have to handle as an organization when you just have too many good players and you can't find enough playing time for everybody.
Coach, the thing that concerns me, you talked about Nikola Jokic a little bit. The thing that really was concerning to me, and like you said, he's made some huge plays. He sees the floor and he passes the ball so well. Coach, he's fat. He's really fat this year. He looks so out of shape to me. Every single time he runs up and down the floor, I'm like, oh, he's not going to make it.
Yeah, and the rumor out there was that during the offseason, he went back home and spent each day seeing how much beer he could drink.
Yeah,
and I thought people were kind of kidding about that. But as you look at him, I'm afraid that he got together with his older brothers and they just had one big barbecue cookout and drank beer all summer long, which is right. So maybe during the course of the year that changes. Maybe his mentality of being the aggressor instead of just being content to lay back and, get 8 points and 8 assists and 7 rebounds. Because if that's where he's at mentally, we're not going to go anywhere. He's got to be that guy that wants 25 and 15 and 10. He wants that triple, double type stat. But he just seems very content to just kind of play second, third, fourth fiddle when he doesn't have to carry the load. He seems very content to do that. And that's just not what's best for that team.
No, it's not. Coach, there's one player on that team that always stands out to me, because when he is good, the Nuggets are great. When he pulls one of his disappearing acts, they just struggle. And of course, that is guard Jamal Murray. Coach, when he's all in and when he is invested and when he is shooting it and feeling it, they are, I honestly think they can play with anybody. When he just disappears, they can get beat by anybody. As much as Jokic is, we know guards are going to win you games when it gets down into crunch time. And when Jamal Murray shows up, they're really, really good. But I don't know how much I can trust that kid.
No, and I think you nailed it right there. And I love Jamal Murray, but I thought by this point he might be a little bit more consistent, a little bit better. And he had a great game the other day against Memphis
at
39. And, but we just don't see that often enough. You see that about one out of every 8, 9, 10 games. And I think Gary Harris is the same way. I think Malik Beasley's the same way. I think Will Barton has a tendency to be the same way, where they're just so inconsistent. And at times it seems like all 4 or 5 of them are in that mode of where they can't hit a shot. They turn the ball over. They have the 2 for 12 shooting nights. And it seems like they all do that on the same night. And we just, you got to find some people that are consistently, all-stars. And right now they're just all very good players, but they're not, at that level where you consider them to be all-stars.
No, Coach, it's going to be an interesting season to watch. It's going to be a fun NBA season in general. We are going to definitely have you back the further we get into basketball season, because we love to get your opinions on what's going on in the world of hoops, college, pro. You just know the game so well, Coach. I have to say thank you so much for stopping by the Dose. We love it anytime you get a chance to come in to get your opinions on just pretty much any sport we want to roll out. You can always tell us exactly what's going on in the sports. You just understand the games so, so well. Thank you so much for stopping by. We always enjoy it when you do. And, happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. And we're going to have to do this again sometime soon.
Yeah, I absolutely love doing this, Coach, and would be glad to do it anytime you'd like to have me on. And Merry Christmas to you, and Happy Thanksgiving, and to all your listeners. And I just really appreciate the opportunity. It's a lot of fun.
Hey, next week on The Dose, It is Thanksgiving week. We just might have to look at a few things that we have to be thankful for this year. Got a lot of things to be thankful for. Going to be talking about those. Plus, we'll have breaking news. And we will have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you. So you know you have to tune in for that. I have to say thank you so much to Russ McKinstry for stopping by the Dose. We do always appreciate you taking the time to stop in. And thank you to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose each and every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts and the tweets. But more than anything, thank you so much for sharing the show with someone else. We love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Have a great week, everybody. I will see you all next Wednesday. Also, I'm not going to pass. I don't play defense and I don't rebound.